Are we ready?
Wait. Okay. Hello?
Yes! So, hi everybody. This
Hello.
Is In Psychom. This is Navneet on the computer. Navneet from Copenhagen.
Yeah, and I'm Abhishek.
And I'm Shruti. This is our much, much overdue first year celebratory podcast.
Yay!
Okay.
We've had a good first year run.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
And we managed to achieve a lot. We wrote some good and maybe not so great articles.
Yeah, but 16 of them, 16 in a year, top that.
So we had fun but producing quite a few podcasts that we were proud of.
Yeah.
And we've got we've listed all our achievements for the year in a poster that we put up on Twitter and on Facebook, so you can go check it out. And in case anybody wants to collaborate with us or they have ideas of stuff that we can do, then please just write to us
in touch. Navneet and I are obsessive Twitter checkers, so we might never miss a message if you message us on Twitter. But we also, you can also email us at
insicom@gmail.com.
Yeah, and between the two of us, we take care of the different time zones. So
yeah, you will definitely never miss us.
Insicom is awake
24/7. 24/7, exactly. And I've been doing a small project on the side called A Sousan of Psychom, which
you may have heard.
Which is a mini podcast series.
If not, please do.
Where I interview interested scientists, science communicators, anybody really who's interested in the communication of good science and who doesn't have the time. So I condense the interactions and their explanations into 15 minutes or maybe less sometimes of a podcast. And put it out every Thursday. And it's actually been really fun up till now.
Unbroken set of podcasts every Thursday for the last...
6 weeks?
6 weeks.
Which is pretty long. Which is like longer than any of my actual experiments, if I may say so.
And the great thing is that people will hear a lot of research that they will not get to know through the regular newspapers or... popular articles.
Yeah, because and you get to hear it from the scientists themselves. So
yeah,
that's exactly. Also like a great positive.
Yeah, and you get to hear about, their motivations for doing their work, mm-hmm. how they got to being where they are in the first place, mm-hmm. why they want to do science, everything, all the background of science that you don't usually hear because you only hear about the successes and the failures.
Mm-hmm. And we have so many more lined up. So if you haven't started following our episodes, please do. The most recent one was on zebrafish. And it is an absolutely fantastic episode. And I had lots and lots of fun with Deepta talking about zebrafish.
All right. And apart from that, we've also been trying to help the undergraduate students in our old bachelor's college in university, Acharya Narendra Dev College, part of Delhi University in India, where we did biomedical sciences. And so it's been an ongoing project. We've done two rounds, which basically involves us giving them articles from the internet that are popular science communication articles. And we help them make summaries of those articles. So the articles are usually 4 or 5 pages long. They have to condense it into a single page summary. We hope that in this way, they'll understand how to do it better. And
sort of get to know about like the language difference between, say, writing a scientific paper versus writing, a SciComm piece. Versus, using lay language, using... not complicated terms to explain complicated concepts, but explain them in a really easy and simple fashion.
Yeah, more enthusiasm, more simple language, less jargon.
Right.
Yeah, our motto is catch them young, so...
That's right.
That's actually what I was about to come to. I'm like, we're starting this a little too early, but it's actually the best time to start if you think about it. Because you learn to write a lot in undergrad. I mean, we wrote a lot, like a lot of our... answers for all the exams and the questions were all sort of essay type answers.
That's right.
And it really would have helped. I mean, in retrospect, I think for me, it would have really helped if somebody gave me this training when I was an undergrad to help me and teach me how to write well and how to write clearly.
And to write for the lay public, right. Not for our teachers to correct our you know, answers and find out how much we knew, but about how well we could communicate what we knew to people right. who did not do science.
Right.
I think Catch 'Em Young is difficult, but I think it's definitely better than Catch Them All, which we're not going to do. So,
hey, I wish I could be a Pokemon trainer, man. What right? the hell? I'm going to catch them all.
Yeah, we're going to catch them all. Yeah, eventually.
Oh, actually, on this note, there's a really nice tweet that's going around. If you, Navneet, I don't know if I told you about this, but I remember tweeting about this from InSciComm. So MassiveSci is a platform that also does very similar things, but for sort of more advanced PhD students and postdoc students here in the US who want to learn how to write good SciComm.
Right, and we know this because one of the first articles I wrote after coming into science communication was for MassiveSci.
And they, so the editor who is in charge of all of like the writing and the editing, she helped a scientist write about biodiversity and conservation using Pokemon Go as sort of like a platform. So Pokemon Go, if you don't know, is this sort of augmented reality-ish game that you can play on your phone where you go out into the world and you try to catch Pokemon. Different Pokemon that are actually present in different parts in your city or in your town or in your on your street even for that matter.
Yeah, virtually. Virtually,
yeah,
really.
Of course. And
Please take care while crossing the
street. Yes, exactly.
Statutory warning, this is not for people who can't pay attention to the road and their phones at the same time.
Right. But it was a really cool article because they talk about how Pokemon Go, how people have used the same sort of platform as Pokemon Go and used it to document lesser known bird species, lesser known urban wildlife.
That's right. Animals live in the cities too.
Yes. And sort of look at their, how do you say, look at their living, sort of look at their niches.
Their living conditions, their living distributions. Conditions. Yeah. You know, there are like micro environments within cities.
It is a very, very cool article. So if you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend you to go read it.
And this is definitely the day to think back about Pokemon Go and other games because this is March the 10th, which is Mario Day.
What?
Hey.
Did you know that? Today's Mario Day.
I had no idea. By the way, just so
listeners of our podcast can benefit from listening to even Shoot the Shit episodes, if you do have Google Maps and you drive anywhere, just enter the directions for where you want to drive today. And before you press that start button that's on the bottom of your phone screen, there will be a small gray color question mark button, very familiar to Nintendo worshippers.
Oh, you'd like the question mark, like the thing that you hit when you play Mario.
It's in Mario.
It goes, ta-ding!
So when you press that key, instead of the arrow icon that's normally there in Google Maps for you, there will be Mario on his Mario Kart.
Oh, that's nice.
And he says, okay, let's go. Ta-da-da-da-da-da.
Wherever you want to go today.
But why is it Mario Day? Is there a significance? Was it developed on this day or released on this day?
That's because it is M-A-R-I-O.
Yeah.
Try to type it out in lead speak. M-A-R-1-0, March the 10th.
Oh!
Okay.
Good job, Abhishek. Very good job. See, I am not fluent in lead speak. Abhishek, is that
no, geek? I just got this from an online article, so. But yeah. Since we're talking about Pokemon Go. Yeah, Google, it seems, collaborated with Nintendo to do an early version of Pokemon Go on Google Maps in 2014.
Which is a sort of
piloting study before Pokemon Go became big. And I believe Niantic took over later and made the actual game.
Oh, I see.
But I think Mario or a certain version of Mario Kart is also going to be released sometime in 2018-19. So this is sort of advertising move for this.
What else have we been doing? So we've been busy with our own work.
Yes, I've been extremely busy.
Right. So Navneet has just moved to Copenhagen.
Yes, it's actually my 6-month anniversary.
Woo! You survived the winter.
Since I moved to Yeah, I mean, obviously, I figured that it wasn't cold enough in Scotland.
Yes, of course. Yeah, you had to go.
You had to rough it out. You had to be Leonardo DiCaprio and eat polar, eat bear liver. Yes,
oh,
yes.
No.
Sleep in a horse's
yes.
Carcass.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I moved to Denmark, to Copenhagen, in September.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been 6 months. So far, I'm really liking it. People are super nice, and many of them are equally fluent in English and in Danish.
Which means you don't get to learn Danish, which is so sad.
No, it's not true. I am starting my Danish language lessons in a month.
Yes! All right. I am always excited about learning new languages, so this is amazing.
That is right.
Yeah, so I will be starting that in a month, and I'm looking forward to that.
Mm.
But even otherwise, it's so cycling friendly. Mm-hmm. Of course, it also benefits from being extremely flat.
Right. So, yes.
but
put that rider, Ravneet. Put that rider, because not everybody lives in a really flat place.
No. I know that. But despite that, I think the government has gone out of the way to promote cycling as a means of transport, to keep people fit and happy, and cut down on emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice to see cycling paths which are in some places as wide as the roads meant for buses and cars.
Oh, wow.
Right.
That sounds really nice.
And it's really nice. And in fact, the most awesome thing you see is parents with these buggies in front of the cycles. In other countries as well. And sometimes they have a single child, sometimes two of them, three of them, sitting in front, sometimes sleeping on their way back from school, ferried across to their ice hockey game or ballet dances classes. Or
the family that bikes together, you know,
is happy together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really amazing. And people seem to have taken to it really well. So, yeah, it's really, so far, so good.
Abhishek has some news too.
Yes, I do. Since the last Shoot the Shit podcast, I have become a science writer at MIT. Thank you. I work at the Picower Institute for Learning and Memory, which is the same building where Shruti works.
Yes.
Shruti continues to remain the stable point in our trio, where Navneet and my fortunes have changed in the last few months.
I am such a boring person. It's not funny. Yeah.
Well, but you can still go ahead and tell everybody what you're up to.
Yeah, what you're up to.
Yeah, okay. So I'm a postdoc at the Tonegawa lab in the Picower Institute for Learning and Memory. And I study interneurons in learning and memory. And I did that the last time we did the Shoot the Shit, and I'm still doing that now.
Yeah. This is the lab, by the way, people, that did Inception for reals.
Well,
Please go check out any number of popular science articles on the internet for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Now we go to the entertainment section of our Shoot the
Shit
podcast.
That's right. Navneet's been binge watching this show on Netflix, which he's going to tell us all about.
Well, not one.
Yes.
Two shows.
Two shows.
All of us are going to discuss shows that we've been watching.
Yes.
That's right.
But Navneet gets to go first because he's special.
Yes.
Okay. So I will start with this show called Dark, which I have finished watching recently.
Okay.
And there's only the first season is out there on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But a second season has been commissioned and I think will be out in December 2018.
Okay.
Wow, that's fast.
And basically it's a German show.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either choose to watch it with English subtitles,
mm-hmm.
or you can choose to watch it with English audio.
And like all good shows, I think
Netflix.
All of us, we would recommend that you watch it in German and with English subtitles, simply because German is a wonderful language.
You should
listen to a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lot of, I feel like if you watch it in the original language, you get a lot of emotional subtext and you get a lot of emotional information that you miss probably if you watch it in English.
Yeah, and it's the language of Goethe. Watch it, people.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if that's going to push people to watch it. I mean, why?
Yeah, so at the very base of the show,
mm-hmm.
is a really small town called Winden,
mm-hmm.
And like all curious towns, it's got a nuclear reactor, which every like more which caters to most of the you know the employment of most of the people in the city in the town. And without giving very much away, this is what I will say, that they talk a lot about the overlapping of the solar and the lunar calendars.
So that's and what this, it is.
Right. So this is the basis. And the thing is that, and a lot of Indians will obviously appreciate this fact because we follow the lunar calendar. And so the months are arranged according to the waxing and the waning of the moon. So you have these 15-day cycles. And when you compare it to the solar calendar, obviously things go out of sync.
That's right.
And so every 12 years in the lunar calendar, you have an extra month added.
Oh.
I see.
So instead of 12 months, you get a 13th month in the lunar calendar, which does not happen in the solar calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you have a leap day in every 4 days.
That's right.
Right. So the premise is that every 33 years, the lunar and the solar calendar get back in sync. So in keeping with that, something has happened in Winden. A child has gone missing. And it triggers a series of events and a series of realizations that this is a repeat of what happened
so many years back.
I see. So that explains some things because I've seen the first 3-4 episodes and I'm like, huh, okay.
Yeah, no, I have to say that it's a really slow show. So it takes a while to, you know, to open up, to really, you know, tell you what's happening. So you need to watch a lot of slow drama happening and you know, very careful writing of the characters and what's, you know, everybody's story, everybody's strife, internal as well as external. And actually towards the latter part of the season, let's say episode 7-8 onwards, it actually gets quite confusing because...
No spoilers. No spoilers.
Okay, it's a good show to watch, people. You must watch it right now.
Did you remember finally?
No, I still haven't remembered.
Abhishek has watched 4 episodes of this with me and he still doesn't remember that he's watched it.
The problem is that I like shows like this and, you know...
He watches too many of
similar
these.
Themes have blended into my mind, I have to watch this
nuclear
again.
Nuclear reactor, a hole in the ground, a child goes missing.
I can tell you a billion different stories that have these plot points.
Oh my God.
But, you know, this doesn't reduce Dark's importance in any way. It just shows how... All the good writers seem to be coming to the good ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a really well written show. I think I could only find some sort of a dissonance in the science behind the behind this.
Because that's what we do for a living.
Yeah.
whatever happens, but then they clarify it towards the end. You don't have that. But I have to say that the casting is so good. It is
wow.
You have to watch the show to to agree to it. But the casting is really spot on. Everything that they show, you tend to agree with it because of this casting.
I mean, it makes it more believable.
The human element really brings everything home.
A slow-burning
show with a great cast, mystery, science fiction, with solar and lunar calendars. Watch it.
And physics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Dark. Shruti, how about one of your shows?
Hey, don't you want to talk about Stranger Things?
We'll come back again.
We'll do that in a
Okay. So I am going to lighten the mood.
Yeah, okay.
My favorite show is actually on Netflix and it's called Midnight Diner. So this is also not an English show. It's a Japanese show. I don't know what it's called in Japanese. Do you remember what it's called in Japanese?
I don't remember.
But okay, if you go to Netflix and search for Midnight Diner, you'll probably get it. This also I would highly recommend. Please watch in Japanese with English subtitles. Please don't watch it with English.
Yeah, the voice actors are, you know, the acting voice actors, everything is much better.
Yeah. And so Midnight Diner is about this guy who has a small diner, sort of like a Japanese style diner, that is open between 12 in the night and 7 in the morning only.
Yeah.
So he caters to a really specific crowd of like insomniacs, people who work night shifts, cops, you know, anybody and everybody who's like awake at that
time. Yeah, or people who work very long hours in the day and don't want to go back home and need some other place to, you
like,
know, unload their troubles.
Unwind and relax a little bit.
Yeah, and also people who sometimes don't have a reason to go back home.
Yeah.
That's getting heavy now.
That's exactly the introduction. The guy running the Midnight Diner does the introductory narration in the beginning, and that's what he says. People who don't want to go for some reason or the other straight back home after their work, come over here.
And it's a really unique diner because he doesn't have a set menu. So if you go in there and you say, hey, today I just feel like having some omelets, and if he has eggs and like all the stuff necessary for omelets with him, he's going to make you an omelet. So it's almost
really like that part. I would love to go to a place like that.
Right? Yeah. Like some days you don't want to eat what's on the menu. Some days you just want, like I do this. I feel like doing this all the time with Indian restaurants.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I just want to go to an Indian restaurant and say, look, I don't want like gravy paneer and like gravy chicken.
Yeah.
Can you just make me like dal chawal and sabzi and roti and I'll be so happy.
You want the home experience, but in the glamour of the restaurant.
Not even the glamour. I just don't want to be at home. I want to be like
somewhere.
You
don't want to do it ourselves. That's right.
You don't want to have dirty dishes afterwards.
That too. Yes. That is a very important point.
We want to have our cake and eat it too. The quintessential problem with life.
So it's a really nice show. It's also very slow, like dark. But it's one... So every episode is a story. So every episode is about somebody who comes to the diner and like what happens with them and their backstory. And the stories are very diverse. Like one of them is a taxi driver. Another one is a physicist. And another one is this a guy who's a grocer whose mother recently died. Another one is, I don't remember.
He's a comedy actor.
Oh my god, that's like the most sad-ish episode in that whole series.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like these aren't interesting when we just tell them to you.
I know, but
they are
each
very
story
interesting.
Is woven very, very well. And again, same, like the casting is amazing. The characters are really good.
It's a heartwarming series. You have to see it when you're depressed and you don't want to do anything anymore and you've lost all faith in life. Watch that show and you'll come right back at life the next day.
Yeah, there's none of this, you know, overt drama that you see.
Yeah,
yeah
it's
yeah,
like very normal
it's,
life, you know.
It's very subtle, very sort of relatable.
Slice of life.
Yeah, it's slice of life.
Slice of
it's
life.
Slice of
yeah,
life, but with a very positive twist.
Right.
But the biggest thing that I like about it is that each episode is connected with one
dish.
Food item.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my favorite too.
Yeah. And they show you how to make that recipe.
So
at the
like
end.
They do the whole episode, and at the end of the episode, just before the credits, like about a minute or so, they show the diner owner making the dish, and he kind of verbally tells you the recipe. So he's like, oh, now you put this in, and now you put that in, and this is how you turn the eggs, and this is how you make the rice.
It's not cordon bleu stuff. It's recap the episode and tell you this was what all of it was about, making somebody good food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Arshik, you want to take over? What's your episode?
Since Shruti's managed to make the mood very light.
Now
I'm going to bring it all the way down. All the way down. And so, one of the shows on Netflix is this anime called Full Metal Alchemist. Or as it's known in
Japanese,
Hagane no Renkun Jitsuchi. So, this is set... It's fantasy and science fiction, I guess.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's an alternate reality earth where... alchemy works and people can use that to do things that look like miracles. And they all have this rule of equivalent exchange. So you have to put enough in to get enough out. And so they call it toka kokan in Japanese. But the show is very interesting because, of course, they set up this world where alchemy is possible. But of course... everything has a price. That's, I guess, the takeaway message from that anime, that everything has a price.
I found this show really cool because there is a thing, the main character in the show, the Full Metal Alchemist, has two prostheses. So he loses an arm and a leg in an accident. And the prosthesis that they use in the series is called Automail. And it's linked, like, it's linked with nerves and everything. And they're fully functional prosthesis.
Yeah, this is an example of what you call schizotech. It's a trope called schizotech. If people haven't checked out TV tropes, please go check it out. But schizotech is when you have a world that has only advanced so far along science and technology, but then you suddenly have an example of something that shouldn't be possible,
I see,
but is still there. Yeah. For example, yeah, the world revolves on alchemy, so science is not that advanced, I assume, but you suddenly have
automated,
fully biologically interlinked prosthesis that connects into your nervous system and helps you move your hands and fingers when you don't really have them. That's the neuroscientific interest
my favorite part
in the show. But yeah, it's very, very cool. The show has a very deep storyline, but it's mostly about people losing something and trying to regain it and the price that's associated with happiness. That's what the show is about.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, that's a really good human angle to it.
You know. So we circle back to Navneet for his second favorite show.
Okay, so the other thing that I finished watching, and this one I finished watching before I watched Dark, was a show called Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm. It is super famous, by the way, at least in the US.
It's very popular, though I know that some people didn't find it so good, especially after watching season 2.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
So Stranger Things has a good cast of Winona Ryder, and David Harbour, and it has a young Natalie Portman.
That's not true. Don't call her young Natalie Portman. She does have a name.
She's called Millie Bobby Brown.
Exactly.
And she's done some remarkable acting, I would say. But again, going back to the show, it's similar to Dark in the sense that it starts off with somebody going missing.
Right.
With a boy.
I'm seeing a theme here, Navneet. Yeah. Have you gone missing when you were young?
It's going back to my childhood trauma.
No.
But I feel like Stranger Things captures that idea about childhood adventure very, very easily, because I felt that it was channeling a lot of Spielberg and E.T.
Yeah, I mean, it has that aesthetic, that E.T. science fiction, young kid adventure. Yeah.
Not just E.T., but also Ghostbusters.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, a whole lot of 70s and 80s pop culture rolled into one. So a child goes missing and the whole town is looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of finding the boy, they find a little girl instead.
Mm-hmm.
And this girl has psychokinetic abilities, meaning that she can move stuff just by...
With her mind.
And then that leads to a lot of... Stranger things.
Stranger Things.
That's why they call the show, you know, Stranger Things.
I don't want to spoil the show for anybody.
No, of course not.
It's a good take on the parallel universe.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
On two worlds existing simultaneously, where the total opposite is happening in the other version.
Right.
And it's really interesting how they've tried to come up with how to communicate between these parallel universes and so on.
Mm. I see.
So in a way, it might remind some people of Interstellar.
I mean, it's in the cultural zeitgeist, that whole idea of parallel universes.
I think we are right now, like Hollywood, but also a lot of places are going through this period where they're using the same motifs or same ideas about parallel universes.
But it stems from a deeply human need to understand or at least imagine what we might have done.
What could have happened.
Yeah, or what could have happened.
Time travel and...
Yeah.
And also like the circularity, this sort of circularity of life, that everything that is happening has already happened.
Has already before. Happened.
Yeah, what goes yeah. around comes around.
That's another circularity. It's not the same circularity.
So that's interesting. Yeah. So without saying too much, that's what Stranger Things is about. The show has effectively ended. I don't think they'll be making any more.
Oh really?
Oh, I see.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a 2-season thing, so it's ended, and okay. I would highly recommend people who have not watched it to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a show that's based on the past in terms of pop culture references. It's very ironic that they talk about that the themes are also about the past being important and life being circular and things happening before being important and happening again.
Yeah.
Very self-referential.
Yeah. Okay.
So to lighten the mood again.
I mean, you see a theme, right?
Yeah.
Like, I prefer watching happy shows after That's I come
right.
home.
That's right.
Like, I don't
want to be bogged down. Like, I have a hard day at work. I have a tough day and I'm troubleshooting all day. I really don't want to come home and find that a child has gone missing. In my head, I'm like, shit, not this again. So my second pick is actually a show on, which is currently on Amazon, but I'm sure Indian people will find it much easier to access because it's also on Hotstar, I've heard. It's a stand-up comedy show by Biswa Kalyan Rath, and it's called Mast Aadmi. And I...
Which means?
Mast Aadmi. It's like, great guy. So I did not know about Biswa for a long time. I know he was really famous on YouTube because, Navneet, you've told me, I think, that he does these pretentious movie reviews on
That's
YouTube.
That's right. Please, people, go watch it if you haven't.
Exactly. So if you haven't watched it, you should really watch it. It's super funny. So pretentious movie reviews, I had not watched it at that time. And the only way I knew Biswa was, I think he occasionally came in AIB and he was a writer for them. So I was curious and we started watching the show and
we lost our minds.
I mean, he's rip-roaringly
outrageously funny again and again and again. We've probably watched that show 10 times now and it is continually being funny.
I think I attribute this to his amazing sense of timing.
His timing,
so
his delivery,
his jokes are a little surreal. So he reminds me a little bit of Eddie Izzard. If you haven't watched Eddie Izzard, you should go try catch some of his shows also.
He's also one of our most favorite stand-up comedians.
Yeah, he's a very surrealist kind of comedian. And it's also, I guess, Eddie is like very also quintessential British, right? It's like that self-deprecating British humor.
Yeah, you can see a lot of Monty Python in him.
Yeah, so, you can see a lot of Monty Python in him. And Biswa has somehow managed to like abstract that, like take the juice of that and apply it to like an Indian context. And he does it really, really well. And it doesn't hurt that he has, you know, I mean, he has the same timeline as we do. So we're almost like, he's our generation. So we grew up like with the same things. Like he had a dad who like moved across the country. I had a mom who moved across the country. So like making friends was always a problem. So very, very similar things like that.
So there is this crudeness, you know, like in Biswa that that brings back memories of, you know, talking to your friend.
Yeah, yeah. Like we were not always so polished.
With no political correctness or anything.
Yeah.
So just speak your mind and sometimes things are just funny because they're funny.
Exactly.
Yeah, on the path to becoming a great person, there is always a time when you're a twerp. You know, a really bad twerp. So,
finally.
And now that we've seen one hope for the world, we'll see how it can go really bad. So, my second favorite show...
You can't catch a break with you guys, man.
You really see...
The boom and gloom people.
I'm the only person keeping all of this together.
Yeah, you see a theme, right? I feel like Navneet and I, the shows we've talked about, they also reflect a part of what we are as in SciComm because, you know...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We do because we live parallel lives. We have our normal work lives. Navneet's a postdoc. Shruti's a postdoc. I'm a science writer. But on the other hand, we're also science communicators who have a secret identity, you know, kind of.
We're all superheroes.
Yeah, we're all Batman.
Okay, I get to be Batman.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, it's like that. This whole idea of what might have happened or how else could you do things. So, Man in the High Castle is the second show that I'm talking about. It's on Amazon. It's one of their flagship projects. They're blowing a lot of money on it with good reason, because it's a beautiful show. It's a dramatization of a novel written by Philip K. Dick, who was one of the all-time great science fiction writers ever. Of course, he did a lot of drugs, and that shows. And that shows, because most of his work is just
paranoid,
completely nuts after a point. But it is very awesome. It is awesome and nuts all at the same time.
Yes,
you know, it's a talent in itself to be able to be super high all the time and still write.
I mean, wait, hello, you say high, but that doesn't, what does like being high mean?
Yeah, that's a problem to describe, because nobody really knows exactly all he took. But yeah, I'm sure he took amphetamines to help him write, and a whole host of other things. He had a very strange life. He hosted a lot of people in his home who were homeless themselves.
Oh, I see.
And I think the drug habit sort of changed from there, because he was trying to experience their lives also. But he was extremely paranoid. And so he worried about communism at the same time that he was worrying about aliens beaming thoughts into his head.
Wow.
While he was worrying about God being an alien extraterrestrial entity.
Wow.
But he was a humanist, and he worried about human things. Even if you've not read Philip K. Dick, you have definitely heard of or seen various versions of his works, because
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Blade Runner.
Is what became Blade Runner. Then you have
What is that called? The Tom Cruise movie.
Minority Report is also a short story that he wrote that has become into a movie. There are also other movies.
The one with the...
with Gary Sinise, I believe.
I see.
It's not a very famous one, but it's about robots looking and thinking they're humans. But then, you know, realizing later on that they're actually robots and sent in there.
I mean, all this sounds very like meh or blasé right now, because our like whole culture right now, pop culture revolves around robots. And,
that's right. We know who the Terminator is.
But there's Westworld and, you know, things like that. But
he wrote this back in the 70s and 80s when this was all crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking.
He was ahead of the curve, you know. So, Man in the High Castle, the story is about what if Germany and Japan won
World War II.
And so America is split
along the Rockies.
Along the Rockies into a Japanese-owned East.
A
Japanese-owned West.
You see how amazing Abhishek is in geography.
Yeah, my geography is pathetic. So it's,
The whole of the region west of the Rockies, which includes current states of California, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, Japan came in from the Pacific.
The Pacific Theater. So the whole west of the Rockies are now
and the Germans
Japanese.
Came in from the Atlantic. And so
everything from the East Coast to the Midwest until the Rockies
is
now
owned
Germany.
Territory.
Is Greater Reich.
It's the Greater Reich.
My God, that even sounds weird the way you say it.
The thousand-year Reich.
Yeah.
But in itself, in that, you know, in that description, just by that description, sounds so blasphemous.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's precisely what made me watch it. I'm like, I cannot even think that this was possible, and yet somebody's written a whole universe about it.
Right?
And I want to know more.
Yeah, the story as well as the images that they show.
Oh, yeah.
Are they just get seared into your mind.
Yeah,
We are in no way spoiling the plot, because you have to see this to believe it.
But the American flag.
Yeah, the American flag.
Boy, that gave me shivers, honestly.
Has the Nazi eagle.
Has the Nazi eagle.
Yeah, and then you realize that America's bird is also the bald eagle, and then the Nazi Reich also had an eagle, and you're like,
and it's kind of messed up in more ways than one.
It's too close. And it's an outrageously fantastic show.
Also, it's produced very well. So, like, the production value of, like, 1950s.
I forget who's it by. It's some really big guy.
Maybe. I don't remember. But, the production value is really high, which means that the sets, the clothes, everything that's in
And the casting is spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on. There is a Mexican guy.
Playing a Japanese,
and I dare you to realize at any point in time in the story that he is Mexican. It is impossible.
Yeah. Anything else we want to add? I think we're...
We're going to be bringing you lots of more stuff. If you haven't been listening to Shruti's Susan of SciComm, please do.
We have so many more people lined up that, you know, I have something to do every weekend. So.
Yeah, but give us a sort of taster of what we've had till now.
Well, we've had, we started with Parshati Patel, who was amazing. She was so nice. It was my first Susan episode and I was really, really nervous.
And she's a planetary...
She's a...
Astrophysicist.
She's an astrophysicist who studies sort of how planets are formed. That was that was our first episode. The second one... Actually, let me pull it up just so I have it in front of me. But I might not go in order, but the one of the ones was Chintan Sheth, who was really, really interesting. So my mom listened to Chintan's episode and was very impressed because she didn't know that people are doing work like this. So Chintan works on image analysis from satellites. And he looks at forest cover, he looks at ice cover, he studies sort of landscapes and things like that. Not just on planet Earth, but he says it's also possible to do it on Mars, which I thought was like fantastic. You know, you can be an astronaut from your sofa, basically. Yeah. Another one was, Devyani Khare, who also spoke about... similar to geology and geography, she's a geomorphologist.
Yeah.
And she spoke about citizen science. And I got to know that there are so many citizen science projects that are running in India right now that I had no idea about. And we talk about a couple of those things on the podcast. There was Vaishali, who was so much fun. Vaishali is works for Wildlife Conservation Trust in India. And she spoke about how... geography was one of her
passions.
The opposite. Okay. She really didn't like geography as a subject when she was in school because it was so boring and it was so dry and it was so badly taught. But she realized that once
she realized the error of her ways now.
Well, yes. And she's like developed a really nice interest for geography. And she talks about how geography has to be taught in relation to, you know, in relation to history, in relation to people, in relation to culture, in relation to ecology. Because geography by itself doesn't make any sense on its own.
No. Yeah.
And finally, I think our fifth episode was Srinivasan Raghuraman. Also had lots of fun. He's a really good friend. He spoke about...
vampire cone snails.
Well, that's one part. But in general, he spoke about... Abhishek always comes up with like the most...
What impresses Abhishek.
Yes, exactly. Yes. You can
vampire cone snails.
And by the way, if you listen to the podcast, the weird... vampire.
That's me. That's all me. Yeah.
Actually, he insisted that I have to put it in. I didn't have a choice. I had to put it in. So Srini talks about cone snails and basically snails that hunt. And not a lot of people know this, but snails, marine cone snails that are present in certain parts of the world can hunt, and they hunt fish, and they have very different ways of hunting. They harpoon fish, they release certain chemicals to make fish sleep.
Just the whole mental image of a snail that crawls, but crawls on the sea bed and then shoots harpoons at fish to eat them. Just boggles the mind.
It's pretty cool. So if you haven't heard it yet, please definitely go and hear some episodes.
And the last one that you did, which we released recently, was with Deepta.
Sorry, Deepta.
Yeah.
Deepta speaks about zebrafish and how she studies spinal cord regeneration in zebrafish and why they're such a cool model system and why she thinks studying them is probably one of the best bets we have to cure and possibly help diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and other things.
Yeah, and so, you know, this wasn't mentioned at the time of the podcast, but I have a great interest in zebrafish because turns out zebrafish are actually native to the Indian subcontinent.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to put that in and I didn't have space, but zebrafish are actually native to the Himalayas.
Yeah, they're found in the Ganges, in the river Ganga. And that's where they originally are from. But in the 70s and the 80s, an American biologist brought them over to America to serve as his chosen model organism to study lots of different things. And now, of course, they've been spread all over the world. Lots of labs use them for n number of scientific investigations. There's even a completely transparent version of this fish that you can see it's...
Yeah, it's larval zebrafish.
No.
Oh, you mean an adult
fish? A fully adult fish. It's called NACRE. The mutation is called NACRE. N-A-C-R-E. And this mutation, I think, removes all melanophores. So it's just completely transparent. And on top of which, I think, they've made it so that neural activity makes the neurons fluoresce.
Oh, yeah. They have genetically encoded calcium indicators.
Yeah. And so every time the zebrafish think, you can see which parts of the brain are activated because they're glowing.
And you can do this when they are doing behavioral
Isn't
it like an invasion of privacy, kind of? I mean, I feel a little bad for the fish.
Yeah, the fish are trying to hunt for food and then you're looking into their brains to see how much they're salivating about it. You know, something
What's really
like that.
Cool is that you can immobilize these fish in... Yeah, they're that tiny. And you can image them while they're immobilized. They don't die. And then you can break open the jelly and you can release them back in their individual tanks.
Isn't that cute?
That's very cool.
Yeah. That's amazing.
There's even an analysis device called a zebra box, which is a completely self-contained research environment to study 96 well plates full of zebrafish. Where you can control the temperature, lighting, any number of things. It's just, it's the whole field of zebrafish biology has been revolutionized turn by turn by scientists coming up with extremely cool solutions to
very inventive ones.
To very difficult problems. There's even a Chinese group, I think, that's made, that's put estrogen sensitive genes into zebrafish and coupled that with fluorescent tags. And so they've released these into rivers. So when they're polluted with estrogen-like pollutants, the fish light up. It's a very easy visual way to know if a certain kind of pollutant is in a river because all the fish are glowing and telling you that there's something wrong. So it's a very modular platform for doing whatever you want biologically. Anyway, please go listen to our podcast. They have very interesting stuff. We can't toot our horn any more than this, possibly.
I think we've done so a lot. But no, they're amazing people and they've done a really good job trying to explain their science.
We'd like to thank everybody who came on our show and helped us. It's your research and your hard work that's enabling us to talk about it. And we would love the opportunity to invite more scientists and science communicators of Indian origin to come and talk to us about their work and their passion.
And we have so many more episodes lined up with like very, very different science. So
that's right.
Cool. I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. So on that note, I'm Navneet.
I'm Shruti.
And I'm Abhishek. And you've been listening to InSciComm Shoot the Shit.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.